All right, quick word about Troll Co. Clothing. Here's what I actually love about this brand. It was started by two guys who worked the oil patch. Not marketers, not guys with corporate pitch decks. Workers. They looked around and could not find any clothing that represented the life they were living. So they made it themselves. Workwear, tees, hoodies, hats. Good quality stuff. The whole brand is built around a phrase you have probably heard. Dirty hands, clean money. The idea that hard, honest work is how you build a good life. And I think most people listening to this show understand that better than they're ever given credit for by the sports media machine. So if you want your gear from a brand that actually means something and was not assembled by a focus group, go check them out. Trollco.com/Zabe. That's TROLLCO.com/Zabe. And use code ZABE25 for 25% off your first order. You know what I love about baseball? There's a game every single day. That's not a complaint. That's a gift. And right now you've got playoff basketball and playoff hockey running alongside the everyday of baseball. That's not a sports calendar, my friends. That's a buffet. MyBookie.ag has all of it. And if you're new, here's the deal. Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. First bet loses, they give you the money back, up to $500 in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for signing up. One rollover, that's it. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Now, go find a game.
This is the ZabeCast, hosted by a Pop-Tart loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight and let's go.
Feeling down and good. Here we go. Tuesday, July 28, 2026. Thank you for downloading. It is a solo ZabeCast. I'm calling it a Let 'em Cook. Solo cast. Let me cook. I got things I want to talk about. And sometimes the things I talk about, I don't necessarily want to tie those opinions or rants or takes to a guest who may not share them. Because then when they go and they're like, oh, I'm on this episode of this podcast, and they see their name in the headline, and they're the main feature, but I start out with something totally different that they may be like, well, I don't necessarily think that. I don't want to be next to that. That's why I have my own days sometimes. So, with that said, how about Dr. Fauci's diary? Jesus. In the history of bad fucking ideas, it is going to be hard to top this one. What has essentially become a daily perjury diary that was somehow found in the investigation led by Senator Rand Paul into the good doctor who was the very face of the pandemic 6 years ago. He is going to have his day on Capitol Hill, I believe on Wednesday, and he is going to face a certain degree of reckoning, but I am keeping all of my expectations not just low, I am keeping them non-existent. Dr. Fauci will die a free, rich man at some point. He's up there in age, but he seems to be relatively fit and healthy, but he is not going to jail. He should absolutely go to jail, but he will not. And the people that you know that once looked up to him, like, oh yes, in Fauci we trust. He knows what he's talking about. Just listen to him. Trust the science. Do what the experts say. Those people will never, they'll never change their mind. In fact, they probably won't even hear about this because they're living in a different timeline. They're living in a different algorithm. As the old saying goes, it's far easier to fool somebody than it is to convince them that they have been fooled. And so therefore, it's like, does a tree that falls in the forest without anyone around make a sound? The answer is, well, who said the tree even fell? Which is now, in today's day and age, well, what tree are you talking about? That's how removed most people are. I would say there's people who come on this podcast as guests who will also be unswayed, unchanged in their mind, and certainly not angry like, this guy was a total asshole. He got everything wrong, and he lied. And all he did was he tried to get more money from all these awards and prizes. He was emailing me people. I was totally shocked when I read this stuff. You know damn well, those people are never going to have that kind of epiphanal moment of understanding. But man, oh man, what a scumbag. A narcissistic, bureaucratic midwit who did just enough to stay in power, to work the system, and to convince politicians that he was this gentle face of the science. I am the science. They're criticizing me because I represent science. It's rather depressing to think of all the shit that went on during the pandemic, as comical as many of the things now look in retrospect. I mean, the arrows on the grocery store floor saying, hey, everyone go this direction. So that way it'll help mitigate things. Going to a restaurant, masks on when you're going to your table, and then you can take them off and eat. Those were real things that I and others tried to at least buck against, but then had the ninnies and the Karens of the world go, yeah, you got to put your mask on. I remember distinctly at a restaurant, getting up from the table, walking to the bathroom, not having a mask on, and boy, oh boy, it took 2 seconds for some server coming by to say, put on your mask, sir. Same thing at the airport one day. I'm just going into National Airport, just going in. And some flight attendant walking out the front door of Reagan National Airport sees me without a mask and makes sure to say, you need to put a mask on. A woman who was working at Costco handing out samples once chided me because my mask had slipped below my nose. So many scared, broken, mindless people who would never question authority. Fauci is and was a massive narcissist. He was complicit directly in funding this gain of function bullshit that everyone said, wouldn't do it. Did it off the books in a sneaky way through a third party in a foreign country. Shit got out. And he then worked frantically to deny that it was the lab that did it, push an alternate theory, demonize those who would question him, and then simultaneously step to the front of the parade as the hero, the savior, who was going to say, here's how we need to beat this thing. And he never went away. He kept in the spotlight even when Trump lost the election. And Trump realized kind of early on, this is part of the diaries that have come out. There was an entry which said at one point, sometime in April, I believe, late April of 2020, Trump brought both Fauci and Birx, old Debbie Birx, dipshit, into his office and said, you guys have ruined this country. I can't believe I believed in you guys. You've got it all wrong. This is a disaster. It was too late. Trump fucked up because he trusted. He should have had better instincts. He should have said, I know that if I take a DeSantis-like stance, if I move to get Fauci out, bring in some other voices that are not as concerned about getting on the cover of magazines and doing 15 fucking interviews a day, that we can get a much better plan that doesn't wreck the economy, disrupt every kid's school experience, and all the other knock-on side effects of lockdown culture. If he had done that, I know he would have said, "This, they're going to demonize me. They're going to say I'm crazy for doing this, and I'm going to lose the election." Ideally, it would have been great if he could have said, I'm willing to risk that or willing to accept that for doing the right thing for the country. But he was not up to it in the moment. And he lost anyway, because look what it did. It got everyone blaming Trump for the pandemic, bringing in remote voting, mail-in ballots, and Joe Biden ends up with 81 million votes. Biden, by the way, not building a presidential library. Interesting. Guy ran for president multiple times. I think three times before he finally broke through and became the nominee. Got the most votes in history, they say. Is not building a presidential library. Why? Because he's broke. And nobody wants to pony up the money. Nobody wants to pony up the money to help him build the typical presidential library. Every past president, I believe, has some form of presidential library. So anyway, it's depressing, I guess. Maybe something good will come out of these hearings on Wednesday. Most of the national media hasn't even touched this story. I believe CBS is the only one that has, and that's only because Barry Weiss has been tasked with turning CBS into more of a down-the-middle news operation, which, of course, if you're down the middle now, that's too far right-wing, and guys like Scott Pelley will say, I'm out of here. How's that working out for him, by the way? The media is the worst. The stuff in the diary about how, oh, Fauci was having dinners with Jake Tapper during the pandemic, when Fauci himself was saying, you should probably cancel Thanksgiving this year. Fuck all the way off, pal. I knew something was deeply wrong with Fauci when I saw the cover of In Style magazine. And it was him on the cover, sitting poolside in just a normal, like, pool chair with his legs crossed, little, you know, just his little scientific khaki pants and a button-down shirt. Sunglasses on, legs crossed, and a smug expression on his face. It was such a weird picture. It looked lame as shit. And I thought to myself, who agrees to this? Who sits down for this? In Style magazine? What the fuck is In Style magazine? It's not Time. It's not Newsweek. This is not the Atlantic. Why is he in the middle of a pandemic taking time out to do this? Answer, because he loved it. He loved it all. He milked it all. He got rich as hell, and he was wrong about everything. But people that loved him, that wanted him to be that soft, gentle face of, don't worry, here's what we need to do. Just 2 weeks to slow the spread. Don't worry, we're closing schools, but we'll do remote learning. Luckily, my daughter, she only missed the last 3 months of her high school career. I feel terrible for kids that lost a much bigger chunk of it in the middle of it. And the knock-on effects with depression, drug use, alcohol use, learning loss, learning delays, anxiety, everything else from these school closures has been well documented. And many people warned of it right from the start. But you had scared teachers that were picketing to not open the schools, holding up tombstones with their names on it because they were convinced they were going to fucking die because Fauci and others preyed on that fear. The social distancing was a joke. Masks were a joke. Lockdown's worthless. The vaccine didn't work. Case fatality rate was low. Ivermectin actually worked. Hydroxychloroquine also worked. This remdesivir, which was supposedly at one point, this is the gold standard. No, that was actually really bad. Killed people. Yeah, the virus came from the lab. And yeah, Fauci funded it. He lied about it all. And he kept a diary, which ought to prove that he committed perjury. And yeah, he's got a pardon. It's a blanket pardon. It could be challengeable. It would take a lot of political will to go after him at this point. And Trump doesn't have it in him to do that. And he didn't have the time. And it's just not going to happen. So my expectation is there'll be some sound bites on Wednesday. Those who know this already, everything I'm saying, will be like, yep, dead right. And those outside the bubble, those who defended him, are going to stay stuck on stupid. If there is somebody who was actually like, you know what, Zabe? I'm one of the rare people. I believed in this guy. I thought he was legit, straight up. Now that I'm hearing all this, fuck this guy. He should be in jail. If you're one of those, I would love to hear from you. I don't think I will. One side note is I've heard from a lot of people over the years that when the pandemic was going on, this podcast and my voice and what I was doing was a godsend to other people out there with a bit of a brain who are willing to read and analyze and think critically and say, something ain't right here. This is bullshit. What are we doing here? Little old me. Now, I was following the pandemic because there was no sports to follow. So it's like, of course I'm going to read about shit. And I'm going to go, okay, wait a minute. Oh, here's something else. All right, how about that? So I followed it because there was nothing else to follow. Anyone could do this. Anyone would do this. Of course, at the time, Twitter was not owned by Elon Musk, so they were closing people's accounts. They were shutting people down. Alex Berenson was one of the absolute great leading voices of, hold on a second, what the fuck? And there were many others, and they ended up losing their Twitter accounts. It's just so crazy in retrospect, looking back, what an utterly dark time in our country. And it's because sociopathic, narcissistic, career bureaucrats who don't give a fuck about pushing a vaccine on kids who don't need it, that might cause them troubles or myocarditis or maybe worse. They don't give a fuck. And it's hard for some people to understand that the Faucis of the world exist, especially in government. And he's only one. There are many other Faucis and Fauci-like people that are in the swamp, that are in D.C. There are grifters and cheats and narcissists and scammers and bullies and all kinds of bad people. And they figure out, hey, it's a way to make money and get power. I'm in. All right, Cubs 4, Red Sox 2. Oh, that's not a real score. That's usually my pivot away from something that is non-sports or serious. Yankees 5, White Sox 4. This is top 8 right now. Giving you incomplete scores. Cubs 3, St. Louis 1. That's top 4. These are partial scores. Let me give you a final. Texas 7, Seattle 3. Holy shit, have you seen Cal Raleigh's numbers this year? The big dumper has gone into the dumper in terms of his production. He is on pace to have one of the greatest drops in home run totals from one year to the next since probably Brady Anderson, the year he hit 52 with the Orioles. Is that possible? I'm just throwing that out there, sight unseen. Okay, let's get to some sports stuff. The Kyle Shanahan thing continues to be odd, and we're getting a little bit more stuff on this. And for anyone who says, well, it's not your right to know everything about something that was not a criminal case, there's been no charges filed, and whoever caused the crash, you don't have a right to know. I'm not saying I've got a right to know. I'm just saying it's insane.
It was scary. You know how close I am to him and his wife, Mandy, and how great of friends they are.
The controls in this thing are crazy. Let me hit refresh on this. This is Phil Sims. Chris Sims. It's not that I or anyone else have a, quote, right to know immediately. It's that this should not be something that sits idle for 11 days. A NFL head coach was in a serious car accident, has sustained serious injuries, and it should not, and the crash was part of public record. And also, people know things. Like, you can't keep this secret. You have to have people willing to collaborate with you that do know, that keep it secret. And I would assume that Chris Sims also kept it secret at the request of the Shanahan family, which I suppose if he's going to put his family ties ahead of him being a journalist, which maybe he doesn't consider himself to be a journalist. He might consider himself to be a talk show host, entertainer, film analyst, or debate partner to Mike Florio. I don't know. But he decided to say, well, I kept this to myself, even though I knew ahead of time. Here was Chris Sims telling about how serious the accident was for Kyle Shanahan.
Doubt about that. It was scary. You know how close I am to him and his wife, Mandy, and how great of friends they are. And, of course, we were in the south of France just a month ago and having a great time together. But, yeah, all of a sudden, one day, I get a text from Kyle's wife, Mandy. She texts myself and my wife. And it's like, oh, no, Kyle's been a part of some horrible accident. And she sent us some pictures right off the bat. And it was like, oh, my gosh. Like, so just to let you know, paint the picture. You've seen the injury report, the broken ribs, 40 stitches in the face, the broken nose,
damn,
broken left hand, of course, the bad concussion. But when you first see it and it's fresh and some of the cuts are still wide open, I mean, it's jarring. It's jarring. He was this close to maybe losing his right eye, right? The scar is so big right here. And so all that stuff was just crazy to see. And of course, I'm, you know, thinking of my friend, but yeah, it's tough. And he's still battling with this concussion. And yeah, it happened about, what, 10 days ago now, I'd say 11, maybe somewhere like that. And
13.
13 now. Holy crap.
And yeah. Happened on the 14th and it was disclosed on the 25th.
He's healing. His face looks a whole lot better, but this concussion, of course, being a part of that kind of accident is lingering and it's giving him issues, and he's certainly still dealing with that. It shook him up, right? I don't think he'd have.
So that's the severity of the injuries. He is out for, I believe I saw one report that said anywhere from a month to the whole season. Obviously, get better, Kyle Shanahan. But at the same time, it's just troubling that NFL media is so beholden to the access to the Shield and the teams they cover, that if this can get buried, who knows what else can get buried? Why buy an NBA team when you could buy a college team for a lot less? It's a hell of an argument, and UNLV head coach Josh Pastor of the Runnin' Rebs made that pitch essentially this past week. Said the program is looking for someone willing to invest $10 to $12 million into its NIL program, saying the team is, quote, basically for sale. He has since had to walk that back by emphasizing, look, I was using colorful language and a bit of a metaphor, and you're not going to own the Runnin' Rebel basketball program. But my point is, somebody who's got money who wants to see us have success could easily stroke a check, and boy, it would really help out. Well, it starts with $12 million. Next year, it's going to be $20. The year after that, it'll be $30, and it'll go straight to the moon. At some point, private equity is going to come in, and these programs will be bought. I'm fully convinced of that. Just like I'm convinced, and this is not going to make Packer fans happy, I'm convinced that eventually the dynamic, the money, the gravity of the money involved is going to lead the NFL to essentially strong arm the Packers board of directors to essentially do an expansion franchise that stays in place, that puts a billionaire owner on top of the franchise and replaces the unique miracle that is the Green Bay Packers, which is a board-run, fan-owned franchise. I hate to say it, but right now, the NFL, if they could do this, would get a $10 billion expansion fee put right into their coffers. And that's as cheap as it's going to be going forward. There's a way to do it. There's a route to do it. They're going to get there eventually. I hate to say it. I hope I'm wrong. But I think before I die, that will probably happen. At the shareholder meeting this week in Green Bay, new president, Ed Policy, Easy Ed, said that they are not going to sell the rights to Lambeau Field at this time. Now, I add the at this time. He just said flat out, and we're not selling the rights to Lambeau Field. Big cheer. I would add, well, now they're not, but the franchise, the board is already saying, hey, we're going to need to find new ways to make more money because we can't do it like other teams do it. We need to be creative here. They're going to have more events, more concerts, more other sporting events, soccer exhibitions, college football games. Notre Dame plays Wisconsin at Lambeau Field this year in September, and that's going to be a huge event. And they're going to do more of these. The financials on the Packers are fascinating because it's the only team that publicly reports because they have to, given their unique financial structure. And they claim to have had a $1.1 million operating loss for the fiscal year that ended March 31st. Now, how do you lose money when the total revenue for the Green Bay Packers was $753 million and the salary cap is $300? That is a $453 million profitable gap. Well, they say that the expenses were driven up 18% by a $131 million jump in player costs from contract structures, acquisitions, including the Micah Parsons trade, releases, trades, and related accounting. Yes, it's always the accounting. Of course, the salary cap is different from the cash that teams have to spend up front for bonuses and buyouts and, you know, dead cap and all this other stuff. So I can understand they probably paid more. And there was probably some other stuff mixed in. But it's not like the Packers are going to go broke. The TV rights alone, which are also going to keep going up, for every team is $453 million. And like I said, the salary cap is $300. You're starting out $150 million in the black. Must be nice. So while I certainly hope they will never sell the rights to the Packers home field, to Lambeau Field, and while I hope there is never an actual owner on top of the franchise, I'm afraid that financial gravity eventually gets so strong, it just pulls everything down. It cannot be resisted. I try not to get involved in the WNBA's on. Here's a scenario for you. It's a Tuesday night. There's a game on. Maybe it's good, maybe not. Who knows? Could go sideways by the fourth inning. But if you're still parked on the couch, what are you going to do? MyBookie.ag Casino. That's what you do. Slots, blackjack, roulette, right there on your phone. And their live dealer tables are genuinely impressive. A real person dealing cards on a live feed. Feels a lot more like a casino than clicking a computer game, that's for sure. Use promo code ZABE at mybookie.ag. New players get $25 in casino credit on their first deposit automatically. And if your first sports bet loses, they refund it up to $500 in free play. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Going stupidity and the stupid commentary, especially from ESPN hosts about Caitlin Clark or the rest of the league or their straw man they set up to knock down when it comes to this league. But it's not a league about basketball. We know that. It's a league that is just steeped in identity politics.
But in totality, and Monica, other, we don't often God, get to
why
hear
does
Caitlin
it do
Clark.
This? Sorry. I just tried to cue this soundbite up and hit pause, and then it wouldn't hit pause on me. My apologies. Monica McNutt, right after the WNBA All-Star break happened, went right after Caitlin Clark with this take. Get a load.
Often get to hear Caitlin Clark's perspective in quite this level of honesty. And this is an important conversation to continue to have with empathy for everybody involved. So listening to that, what was your reaction?
I thought the choice, the word of being fearful of the conversation after a game that she alluded to was interesting because oftentimes it seems, at least in the larger discourse, and not that there's not an emotional experience for Caitlin Clark, because I believe that it is, but it's the folks that are accused of doing something outside of the parameters of competition that are actually the ones that are fearful when you look at their social medias. This is what I will say. Caitlin Clark is...
The fuck are you saying, by the way? Is this about basketball, by the way? Are we talking about the basketball?
24. She is a shining star in the galaxy of the WNBA. But I do think as she continues to matriculate through this league, there's room for a little bit more accountability and self-awareness in terms of her role in the larger sisterhood, if she sees it it that way in the WNBA. But Malika, I agree with her 100%. It is certainly exhausting for all of us who really want to celebrate where this league is and the beautiful basketball that is being played. Yeah. This larger discourse that can be very disappointing.
Yeah. And
the sisterhood. The sisterhood. David Burge at Iowa Hawk Blog says, in short, this is not a women's sports league. It's a joyless, angry, violent, race-obsessed, nonstop 2018 Oberlin struggle session filled with entitled lunatics unable to survive without someone else picking up the bill. They whine when they don't get attention. They whine 10 times harder when they do get attention. They whine hardest about the problematic new fans who quadrupled their pay, tripled their audiences, 10x their franchise valuations, got them on charter jets, and staved off their inevitable bankruptcy for 10 years or so. He says, I sincerely hope they achieve their dream of exercising themselves of Caitlin Clark and all those dreaded new fans and return to their beloved paradise of half-empty, thousand-seat high school gyms attended by girl fight fetishists with giveaway tickets printed on Subway sandwich receipts. Oh, God. Something else, this league. But again, it's a league to be ignored, which is what most of us have done for a long time. There's a new 30 for 30 podcast coming out about Shohei Ohtani and his gambling and the allegations that, oh no, it wasn't Shohei, not the allegations, but the narrative, which has gone through court and the guy's in jail now, that it was all his interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara. Here is a little snippet from the Betrayal of Shohei Ohtani, a 30 for 30 podcast. Podcast. Don't look for this on the television. This is a podcast.
Earn, there is a paper trail that connects Shohei Ohtani to Matt Boyer. And I've tracked down a source who has that proof. But they're nervous, and it takes weeks before the source agrees to show it to me. And they're not going to make it easy. It's the middle of the night. I'm driving to meet my contact. I find them standing outside of a car in a parking lot waiting for me. I drop into the passenger seat. The contact hands me a cell phone and tells me the proof I want will appear on an encrypted app and each image will disappear in 30 seconds. I can't take pictures, but I can take notes. I pull out my notebook and I tell my contact, I'm ready. A document appears on the screen, September 14th, 2023, $500,000. I spot the word loan and scribble it down in my notebook, but I don't have time to ask questions because the second document appears, October 2nd, 2023, $500,000. Both documents include the same long list of numbers on the screen. Later, after I drive away, I will stare at the jumble of letters and numbers I scribbled into my notebook, and I'll realize it's routing information. I just saw wire transfers from a bank account at Bank of America. And there's a name attached to the account, Shohei Ohtani. According to the screenshots I just saw, Shohei Ohtani's bank account sent wire transfers to Matt Boyer's illegal bookmaking operation. I saw two of them, totaling $1 million. I've got it. The direct link between Shohei and the bookie's operation. But before I can even begin to wrap my head around what I've seen, a source reaches out with new information and a new name, Ipe Mizuhara, Shohei's interpreter for the past 6 years. The source tells me Ipe is prepared to say he was the one gambling and that Shohei was paying his debts.
Yeah.
And I learned.
Okay, that's Tisha Thompson, by the way. Give her credit for this thing. I'm going to listen to it. Although I don't know if it's going to do anything to change my mind or convince me further. Like anyone with a brain, it's like, yeah, no. Of course it was fucking Shohei. And baseball spent all of 1 month looking into it. Like, hold on a second. Hold on here. We want to make sure this is not just being set up that old Ipe is going to be the fall guy. I believe a total of like $17 million was transferred. And they say, no, Ipe was very good in impersonating Shohei. And that's how he was able to convince the banks to do it. And nobody caught him. One of the reasons that I believe this is complete bullshit that they blame it on the interpreter, is that doesn't, I mean, Otani's got to have so many financial advisors, accountants, other consultants, that none of them got fired. You never heard about, well, Shohei's fired his financial team. They let $17 million walk out the door, march out the door, line by line, in a big old boop, 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 and didn't stop it. Didn't go, hey, Shohei, are you doing this? Do you know that you've sent $2 million last week to some bookmaker or to some weird account? We don't know what it is. No, he didn't hear any of this. It's all too convenient. Now, I can tell you that, you know that, but it's very funny when a comedian says it even better. Let's see. This is, I believe, Jimmy O. Yang, who has the whole thing distilled very, very well. Take a listen. Oh, six pop-ups.
Later. But have you ever seen a Shohei Ohtani interview? The man speaks English. When they asked him about gambling, he just forgot all about it. He was like, I know. Gamburu. Turns out after some investigation, his translator stole $17 million from his bank account, and he didn't even know about it. I'm like, what kind of Asian are you? That you don't see $17 million being gone? If $5 is gone from my bank account, my mom will call me. She'll be like, Jimmy, what happened to the $5? I'm like, Mom, it's just an ATM fee, okay? It's no big deal. She's like, oh, your ATM fee. Oh, Jimmy, I thought I taught you better than that. Most people take money from ATM. You are giving money to the ATM. What's wrong with you?
Oh, God. I got to watch more of his stuff. Jimmy O. Yang. Couple more before we're done here. I love it when serious research nerds dig in to get to the bottom of something that is pretty damn inconsequential in sports, and yet find something interesting. The NBA changed its rules a year ago to not count last-second heaves at the end of the half or the quarter or the game in games that are not close. Do not count them as missed field goals, because the feeling was guys were not taking them because it would slightly lower their shooting percentage, which could, in theory, when they become free agents, cost them money. Now, my gut reaction was, no, come on. Guys aren't thinking of that. They're the same NBA players that are dropping 15 grand in the club on a Tuesday night. There's no way. Well, a new research paper by two Texas Tech professors found that players that took a shot 94% of the time last season had only taken that shot 58% in the decade prior. The paper said the most reluctant to shoot before the rule change was concentrated among efficient shooters and players in contract years. It's a whole paper that they dug into it. They did the research shot by shot, player by player, situation by situation, and the numbers don't lie. From 94% to 58%, or the other way around. 58% prior to the rule change, 94% now say, let it fly. Again, an utterly inconsequential thing. But it's fascinating when people that are smart say, well, let's check the numbers out on this. Pardon My Take Stats on Twitter has this: the most technically possible but still unachievable things in sports right now. Number one, pitch a perfect game and still lose. Two, score a condor in golf. I've never heard of a condor. I'm assuming that's a hole-in-one on a par 5, which would be 4 under par, An albatross is a 2 on a par 5. That's 3 under par, so I assume that's what they're calling a condor. It's never really been done, but in theory, get a downhill par 5, hard conditions, tailwind, meathead like Bryson DeChambeau. You never know. Number 3, technically possible but unachievable things in sports, a 100-point NBA game. Number 4, a 20-0 NFL season. And 5A and 5B is USA dominating in soccer or USA dominating in tennis. Yeah, the soccer thing is probably never going to happen. Tennis, hell, we once had many, many great tennis players. Not so much anymore. Did you see that the University of North Carolina has put Mike Lombardi on paid leave? In part, according to reports, because of a HR inquiry into a possible workplace behavior violation at North Carolina. Mike Lombardi is not well liked. In fact, he's probably one of the most hated guys in college football and the NFL. In fact, somebody dragged up a quote from back in the day about, you know, Lombardi from Al Davis when he was alive. Al Davis said, essentially, this guy gets fired everywhere he goes. Like, why do they, you know, he's okay, but otherwise he's not really well liked. Here was Mike Greenberg, normally not one to rip anybody, digging into this story on SportsCenter.
...have been disclosed. Lombardi worked under Belichick both in New England and in Cleveland, joined him at Carolina in December of 24. He's had a few somewhat notorious moments last year, including when he told Patriot scouts they wouldn't get access to the Tar Heels program. Yeah, he also boasted that Carolina would be the 33rd NFL team. They went 4-8 last year in Belichick's first season, didn't have a single player selected, and this year's NFL deals have been disclosed.
So there you go. Belichick and Brady, when they were winning championship after championship after championship, sat at the highest pinnacle of people's respect and awe. Like, these dudes are it. And each of them is well on their way to pissing away all of that mystique, all of that reputation. Doesn't take away the fact that they were great with each other and won at a rate that will never happen again in my lifetime in the NFL. But in terms of the perception of both, Belichick, with the whole Jordan Hudson thing, the fact they went 4-8, now Lombardi is going to likely be fired. What a disaster. This one from Mike Bouvet. Spare a thought today for Belichick, who has to pick up his girlfriend from summer camp and let her know that Uncle Mike is going to go away for a while. Ah! John O'Connell on Twitter. Between Kraft, Belichick, Brady, and Vrabel, and now Lombardi, I'm beginning to think the Patriots maybe weren't the best group of guys. The first response to that tweet is a picture of Aaron Hernandez at trial. Yeah. Couple other quick hitters. The OnlyFans to Bottle Girl to Real Estate Agent Pipeline in Scottsdale, Arizona might be the most consistent career progression of the last decade. I sent that to my buddy, the Desert Fox, out there, and he said, yep. You come out to visit me, you'll definitely see a few of those, to be sure. Arizona State University, which was my safe school, my backup school, has become the first university to offer a major in influencing. Yes, indeed, you can go to Arizona State to become an influencer. And you know what? It's a lot better degree to earn than some of the other shit that is being offered. This one from Thrilla the Gorilla. This generation couldn't handle a Saturday night back in the 80s or 90s. One, we had to find out where everyone was by simply driving around. We went to parties in cornfields or even in the woods. We drank trash can punch in MD 2020. We stayed up till the sun came up. Our parents thought we were spending the night at a friend's house. And yet the music was unbeatable. Amen to that. Last one from Raksha. If you don't whisper, what
the fuck to your email silently at your cubicle at least 5 times a day? Are you even in corporate? What the fuck? Yep. I've seen them, as have you. That is a wrap for today. Hopefully I cooked up a nice podcast meal for you. A Let Them Cook Tuesday. Maybe this will be a tradition. Every Tuesday is Let Them Cook. Let Zabe do what he does best Tuesday, and I'll keep it going. I got Charch lined up for later in the week. Already people are sending me the Monopoly post, which I've received, and I've put it under Charch's nose, so we'll get to it. But somebody said, hey, if you read the actual box back rules for Monopoly and played by those rules, the game's not as bad as everyone says. Many people said, ooh, take this to Charch. And I'm like, Charch is still going to call it one of the worst board games ever. He's not going to change his mind. But we will see what he has to say about that. And I have for Charch what may go down as my version of Hedy Lamarr. An obsessive deep dive into something that I did not know fully about until just yesterday, years old. Maybe it'll be interesting. Maybe it'll be Hedy Lamarr too. That's with Charch later in the week. Thank you for listening and subscribing. You can become a 5-day-a-week subscriber for a mere $5 a month. In fact, less than that if you sign up for a year at a time. Appreciate that. Zabe.com/premium is how you sign up. Help support this podcast as well as your ratings and reviews of 5 stars. Give me 5 stars. Don't give me 4. Don't try to be precise on this, okay? You're going there to give me a rating. You like the podcast. Doesn't fucking matter. It's free. Just give me 5. That's what they said. Tell a friend as well. Doesn't hurt either. Thanks for listening. Have a great Tuesday, everybody. And we will see you next time. The playoffs are here, people. NBA and NHL both going at the same time. That's the best 2 weeks in the sports calendar, right? And it goes fast. More games, more angles, more ways to be right, and more ways to win. That's the fun. MyBookie.ag has it all. And right now, for new players, use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. And if your first bet doesn't hit, they refund it. Up to $500 back as free play, one-time rollover. Plus $25 in casino credit automatically. That's called insurance, my friends. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.